It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do, and don't you ever forget that.
And now, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's program. We're really excited about tonight's episode, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Aquilyn Kennedy.
Hello, everyone.
Executive Producer and Chief Brand Strategist for Kennedy for Alabama. The second, joining us by phone, is the Honorable Mr. John Merrill, the Alabama Secretary of State. The third, joining us in the bottom half of the hour, is Mr. John Sharp, who is a reporter for AL.com. And last but not least is Mr. Charlie Moss, who is working the production board and keeping Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. So, Aquilyn, tell me something good.
Hey, guess what today is?
What is today?
It is National Nurses Day.
Oh, wow.
Yes, May 12th. We love our nurses. I personally am probably the biggest fan of nurses, and I'm just so thankful for them, and I hope that you are too. One of the reasons that we are out of the part of the pandemic we were in is because of the work that those nurses have done to get us there. And one of the ways that you can help and appreciate them is do everything you can to stay safe. So please stay safe and keep those around you safe. Wear a mask when needed.
A lot of love and respect to all of our nurses. And as the joke often goes, nurses keep the doctors from killing you.
So, there you go.
Thank you to all that you have done for us historically.
Yes.
So with that, we are going to jump right into it. We're going to go to the phone lines and see if we have our first guest here. Secretary Merrill, you on the line?
I am. Good evening, Robert. Great to be with you.
Hey, it is great to have you with us as well. I know you and I have been fortunate and blessed to know each other for a few years now. And one of the visions that I had when we started the Kennedy for Alabama program was that we would not only talk to folks on the Democratic side, but we would talk to folks on the Republican side and folks who are actually seated in elected offices at this point in time. So I really do appreciate you taking a few minutes to speak to us tonight.
My pleasure, friend.
Okay, so before we get into the nuts and bolts, what I like to do here is go all the way back to the beginning. So when you were growing up, what is it that you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, I grew up in the courthouse. My daddy was the circuit clerk and later the probate judge of Cleveland County where I grew up, and so I grew up in the courthouse.
Okay.
I'd go up there every day after kindergarten, and then he'd take me to the babysitter, and I'd stay there till my mother got home. She was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got older, of course, I started watching more intimately the things that were going on in the courthouse. And I would actually go in the courtroom and listen to the judges and the attorneys and watch those cases and just kind of pay attention to the things that were happening. But when I decided where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do was when I was about 14 years of age, my dad had put together a community event there in Heflin.
Mm-hmm.
This was for the primary that was in September of 1978. And we had people come from all over Alabama that were campaigning for different positions. And one of the guys that was there was a good-looking, tall, young guy, very well-spoken. And I asked my daddy, I said, "What's that guy's name and what's he running for?" He said his name is Don Siegelman, and he's running for Secretary of State.
Okay.
And I said, "Well, what does the Secretary of State do?" He said, "Well, he's in charge of our elections. He's in charge of business incorporations, licensing, trademarking, and international adoptions." And I said to my dad, I said, "Well, you know, that might be something that I'd like to do sometime." So I started watching that campaign a little closer, and then 2 months later, when they had the primary, Governor Siegelman was elected, or selected to be the nominee. And then after that, he got reelected in 82. And then Glenn Browder got elected after one term in the legislature. He got elected in 86. And then he became the congressman in April of 89 after Congressman Nichols died in office. And then Congressman Browder was elected to that position. And then Governor Guy Hunt appointed Perry Hand, who is a former state senator from down there in Baldwin County, to fill the unexpired term. Then in 1990, Billy Joe Kemp beat Perry Hand. Perry was the first Republican to serve in that role since Reconstruction, even though he was appointed. So Mr. Kemp served for a couple of years, and then Governor Folsom asked him if he would move over to become the director of the Alabama Development Office.
Okay.
Because that's when we were starting the process of recruiting Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the number two local guy in Tuscaloosa County when we recruited Mercedes, but Mr. Kemp went over there. Then Governor Folsom appointed Jim Bennett, who was a Democrat, to serve the rest of that term. And then Bennett was elected in his own right in 1994. And then 1998, Bennett was elected as a Republican.
Okay.
And he served for 10 years. And then Nancy Worley was elected. Then Beth Chapman beat her in 06. And then Beth was reelected in 10. Beth resigned in August of 13. Jim Bennett came back, finished that term, and then I got elected in 14. And for the last 7 years, 3 months, and 21 days, I've been your Secretary of State.
Not like anyone's counting, right?
That's right.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the role of Secretary of State. And this is one of the things that I've been most fascinated about since I dipped my toe in the water in electoral politics, was a lot of the focus tends to go to the top, right, to the governor or maybe even the lieutenant governor. But I find when I talk to people, they don't always know what is within the scope of the role of the Secretary of State. So I know you touched on it a little bit when you talked about being 14 and learning about it for the first time. But just for the benefit of the audience, can you just kind of break out those buckets?
Absolutely, Robert. The Office of the Secretary of State of Alabama is the oldest office in the history of the state.
Okay.
Alabama had a Secretary of State before we were a state. In 1818, Henry Hitchcock was appointed by James Monroe, our fifth president,
mm-hmm.
to serve as Alabama's first Secretary of State. Now, he served ably in that role in 1818 and 1819. December 14th, 1819, Alabama became the 22nd state admitted to the Union. And since that time, we've had 48 individuals who served as Alabama's 53 Secretaries of State.
Okay.
I'm the 53rd Secretary of State. Our code and constitution give more than 1,000 assigned duties and responsibilities to the person that holds this position.
Okay.
And those include, but are not limited to, three things that I mentioned earlier, which are elections, which includes voter registration, voter participation, campaign finance reform, campaign finance review, election administration, all the things related to the elections process.
Gotcha.
And then business incorporations, licensing, trademarking. If you start a new business in our state, you have to go through our office before you can hire someone or pay 1 cent of tax.
Okay.
And last but not least, international adoptions. And when a family is trying to make their family whole, we want to remove all the obstacles, red tape, and roadblocks that may exist there to make that a seamless transition for those families during that anxious time.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I actually want to go back to the business portion because, as I alluded to previously, it was one of the things that kind of popped up on my radar screen as I got a little closer to the electoral politics process. So when you talk about your office and the services that they provide, I know one of the things that folks have been very interested about is how technology has actually changed things happening in the office and have kind of made it a little easier to do some things quicker. So I know that's probably one of your accomplishments during the times you've been in office. So could you talk a little bit about what you've done in that space?
Well, you're kind of bring that up because one of the things that was the case, Robert, when I became the secretary, it was if you filled out your paperwork and submitted your check there at the courthouse in Mobile Government Plaza,
mm-hmm.
and Judge Davis's team sent that to Montgomery, it was 7 to 9 months before they confirmed receipt of your check.
Oh, wow.
And before they cashed your check and before they received your paperwork and processed your paperwork. And so we were very frustrated at that because that was delaying the creation of jobs. It was delaying the opportunity for economic growth and development. And we wanted to clear that up as quickly as possible. So we made some changes. And it took us a little while to do it, about 14 months before we really got it where we needed it to be. But after about 14 months, we went back and revisited it, and they had gotten it down from 7 to 9 months down to 42 days.
Okay.
Now, that's great because, you know, that's just a little bit over 7 weeks, but we still were not pleased. And so we made some other changes, which I know we don't have a lot of time to go into that right now, but I'll tell you, the result was that after those last set of changes were made, for the last 5 years, 6 months, and 3 weeks, we've been at same day on business filing.
Okay.
So the day that the paperwork comes in is the day the paperwork gets done. And we've been doing that with 13 less employees. So we've gone from 49 employees down to 36 employees. We're not operating at the speed of government anymore. We're operating at the speed of business.
Now, those employees, was that natural attrition, or were they transferring to other places, or were they folks that were
no,
let go?
No, Robert, we helped some of those people find a place to serve outside of state government.
Okay.
Because I'm not one of these people that believes that just because you have a job in government, you need to go somewhere else and stay in government. Because if you can't get it done, you need to go somewhere else. And that's what we help those people do. If you can't pull your weight, we'll try to work with you, find another place for you. But if we can't find that, you need to get a real job.
All right. Simply put. So with that, I want to transition a little bit and just talk about elections. And I just want to set the stage for the listening audience. So you and I met in 2018, I believe it was.
Yes, sir.
You had made a face-to-face appearance at the NAACP conference in Orange Beach, Alabama. And when we were talking offline, there were two things that you did. First is you actually gave me your cell phone number, and you mentioned that if I ever had a question that I could call you directly. And second, we talked a little bit about the process of obtaining voter IDs. So could you just, for the audience, can you just explain what the rules are as they exist today with the voter ID requirement? And then I'll explain to the audience the conversation you and I had offline.
Absolutely, Robert. When you get ready to vote, you have to present a valid photo ID. Now, 98%, 99% of the people that vote in this state, they present their valid Alabama driver's license as the form of a preferred source.
Okay.
But there's about 10 other different items that can be used: a tribal ID, a military ID, a student ID, pistol permit if it's got your picture on it.
There's sure.
Any number of different items that can be used, and we want the people to use the one that they feel the most comfortable using. So at that point, you present that whenever you are going to check in to vote, and then after they check you in, they sign you in on the electronic poll book. Then at that point, you receive your ballot, and then you go to your location, and you vote for the candidates of your choice. And then after that, you put your ballot in the tabulator, and they give you your I voted sticker, and that's your experience. And that's pretty simply how it works. Now, one of the things that we do, Robert, and you know about this, we conduct voter registration and photo ID drives all across the state.
Yes.
We go to every county at least one time a year, and we hold a voter ID drive, and we give out a free ID whenever they're needed. Now, we'll go to every county to a place that's predetermined, but we also go to festivals, events, and activities like the Peanut Festival in Dothan,
mm-hmm.
or the Tomato Festival in Slocum, or the Magic City Classic in Birmingham, or the Rattlesnake Rodeo down
right.
in Covington County, down in Ops. So we try to go all over the state to visit with folks. But if somebody contacts us, Robert, and they say, look, I know you came to Coosa County, but I wasn't able to go to Rockford that day. Or I know that you were at Panoply in Huntsville, but I was out of town. So can you help me? And if they don't have transportation and they can't go to the registrar's office where they can get their photo ID made any day that the courthouse is open in any county in the state, we will go to their home and we will give them an ID there at their home.
Yes, and that was the part that I wanted to bring to the forefront of the conversation you and I had in private. So at that particular point in time, I had not personally seen the portable voter ID process.
Yes,
but
sir.
Subsequent to that meeting that you and I had, I've seen it a number of times. And I always kind of have a little bit of chuckle because, you know, I'm from Pritchard. We live in Pritchard. And so it was when I saw the voter ID group come up in the city of Pritchard, and they were doing it right there at the senior center. Again, it just reinforced the conversation publicly that you and I had in private.
Yes, sir.
The second conversation that we had, and I want to mention this because I think this bears on the responsibility of elected officials to respond to the public. So there were times when I wanted to verify what I was seeing visually, where I had actually called you and you put me in contact with members of your team who could provide the information. So I'm not necessarily looking for the specific numbers, but can you just talk about, you know, the data that you have available when folks ask about the number of people who are registered, the number of people who've participated in an election, or the number of IDs that have been issued by your portable group going around the state?
Well, certainly, Robert. Now, first of all, I want you to know that when I became the secretary, we made a concerted effort that we were going to ensure that each and every eligible U.S. citizen that's a resident of Alabama would have the opportunity to become a registered voter and obtain a photo ID.
Okay.
And I've just described to you the process that we've used about visiting the counties, but we've also used notable elected officials, notable residents of Alabama, entertainers, coaches, all kinds of folks, from Nick Saban and Gus Malzahn to Charles Barkley and Deontay Wilder, Dr. Mae Jemison, Lionel Richie. This year we're using Lionel Richie and Donald Trump. And we have had an inordinate amount of success in doing that. But since January the 19th, 2015, as of today, we've registered 2,040,212 new voters. We now have 3,638,520 registered voters in the state. No state in the union has done as much as we've done in that same period of time. Per capita, we lead the nation in voter registration. And each and every election that we've had since I became the secretary, we have broken the record for voter participation as well. So those people that say the photo ID component is one that's designed to keep people from participating, we must not be doing a good job, because they're breaking records left and right every time we have an election where people go into the polls casting their ballot for the candidate of their choice.
Gotcha. And I know that if we get into some of the philosophical issues that you and I may have some opinions that are different, but I think it's very important for us always to talk about what the facts are before we have any debates about what the facts mean. And so that was the reason why I was particularly enthusiastic about one to have you on, one to hear from you directly, and one the listening audience to hear essentially a conversation that happened between a citizen and an elected official in private that we could actually bring into the public space as well. So I really do appreciate that.
I think
Auckland has a question that she wanted to ask you.
Yeah, I want to say, you know, kudos on those huge numbers in terms of making sure that we have made access to the ballot a priority, and we need to continue doing that. You know, we're never the best that we can be, so we can always do better, right? And we can always keep pushing.
No doubt about it.
So, but some of the things that have come up just in the, you know, the standard walk and talk is, you know, I've heard concerns about, wow, I'm no longer registered, or just what happens? I know that there's been so much work to get people registered and get people on the voter rolls. Why is it that?
Well, I think sometimes people are confused when they say, I'm no longer registered. That typically is not the case.
Okay.
What may be the case is that they are listed as inactive.
Mm.
Now, if they're listed as inactive, that typically happens most of the time about the time that we go through between May of after the presidential year, so in this instance it would have been 21, until you have the next election. And the reason is because we are charged, according to the federal government, to reach out to all registered voters and to make sure that they're notified, to make sure that they still reside in the location where they say that they live. Mm-hmm. So by law, we contact them through a postcard, and if they are still where they're supposed to be, the instructions tell them what they're supposed to do. And if they don't do that, then what happens is they're placed on an inactive list. And if they're placed on an inactive list, there's only a couple of ways that they can be removed from that list, put back on the active file. Now, the main thing to remember is that they're not removed from the list. They're just placed on an inactive file. Okay. That means if they want to become active again, when they check their voter registration status, which they can do electronically at alabamavotes.gov, or they can do on our mobile application at Vote for Alabama. And then at that point, they can just reactivate their voter registration record.
Okay.
Do it independently of anybody as long as they have a valid Alabama driver's license. But if they want to do it in person, they can submit an update form at the registrar's office, and then they become active once again. Now, let's just say that a person doesn't do any of that, that they don't know that they're inactive.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go to the polls, and they walk up, they give their ID, and the people say, well, you're currently inactive. Well, that doesn't mean anything except that now that you're at the polling site, whichever one of your the polling sites you've been assigned to, we have 1,980 of those, you just fill out the update form, and then you vote a regular ballot. You don't vote a provisional ballot or anything else. You vote a regular ballot.
Oh,
but
okay.
The inactive part is done to protect the voter.
Okay. So you can vote. So when you vote in that scenario, mm-hmm. do you then become active automatically, or is there any other additional?
Well, don't forget the part that I said, which is if you are on an inactive list and you go to vote in person,
mm-hmm.
then the first thing you have to do is to fill out the update form.
Okay.
And once you fill out the update form, then you are an active voter, and then you vote a regular ballot
and then
on
you vote.
Site that day.
Got it. Okay. Well, that's excellent information for our community, so we appreciate that.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, Mr. Secretary, we've got about 2 minutes left before we'll ending this segment. Can you take a little bit of time to address the issue of voter restoration and just kind of that whole process happens?
Let me tell you something, Robert. I don't know how in-depth we've ever talked about this. I don't really remember. But I will tell you that one of the things that really concerned me when I became the Secretary is that we had laws that were being interpreted by different people different ways related to crimes of moral turpitude.
Okay.
We would have different crimes, the same crime committed in different counties, and different registrars were saying that it meant different things and that you might lose your right to vote. So we codified those in 2017, and now there's a standard of 47 crimes that are listed, and those are available on the website too, so you know what those crimes are. Now, as far as restitution, restoration of voting rights, one of the things we discovered was that there were people that were incarcerated, and people that are incarcerated can still vote.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be noted. They can still vote as long as they've not been convicted of a crime that's a disqualifying felony, and those are crimes of moral turpitude, like I just mentioned.
Okay.
But if you're incarcerated, you can still vote. You just have to vote absentee. The other thing that you need to know is that we found out there were people who were incarcerated who were still having fines and fees accrued against them and making it more difficult for them to recover from that.
Okay.
So we changed the law to say that if you've been convicted of those crimes and you're incarcerated, once you've served all your time and paid all your fees and all your fines associated with your original sentence, which could be reduced by a judge at any time, then your voting rights are automatically restored.
Okay.
We passed legislation that is model legislation throughout the U.S. for that purpose.
Okay. Well, Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to explain to us what the rules are of how everything executes today. Again, thank you for allowing us as citizens to have direct access to you, as well as giving us the information that we need whenever we have requested that information.
Well, you're very kind to reach out. I hope y'all call me anytime, and I appreciate you giving me this time tonight, my friend. But Robert, look, if anybody, any voter can hear my voice, if they need me, they can call me on my cell at 334-328-2787.
All right, Mr. Secretary, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really do appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
So We are going to go to the bottom half of the hour break, pay a few bills, and then we will see you guys on the other side. I'm Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market, specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications. Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just now joining us, during the first half of the show, we had an excellent opportunity to talk to our Secretary of State, Mr. John Merrill, who basically walked through the duties and responsibilities of a Secretary of State, as well as did a little bit of a deep dive on the role that they play in the business licensing and trademark process. And then we wrapped up with a really good conversation about what the current rules are with regards to registration, voter IDs, et cetera, et cetera. So very thankful to Secretary Merrill for taking some time out of his schedule to do that for us. So with that, we are going to go to the phone lines and see if we have our second guest of the evening. Mr. Sharp, are you on the line?
Yeah. Hey, Robert. How are you?
Hey, John. How are you holding up, man?
I'm doing good. Everything good with you?
No complaints. No complaints whatsoever.
Oh, that's good.
You know, I was looking up your articles earlier today as I was putting together some headlines that I didn't end up reading. And there's a whole heck of a lot that has been going on here in Southwest Alabama this week. Two things, both that are related to the creation of jobs. First, the thing at Austell, and second, the thing with Novartis over in Did I pronounce that right? Novalis?
Novelis.
Novelis.
We're all trying to pronounce it right. It's a brand new company to our lexicon down here in South Alabama. But it's an Atlanta-based company and just announced, hot off the presses yesterday, that they're going to be building a massive manufacturing plant, aluminum manufacturing plant, at the mega site in Baldwin County.
Well, yeah, that has to be pretty exciting. So I know you did some reporting on that. So can you just take a moment and share with the listening audience what you came across?
Sure, yeah. So it's been an exciting week from an economic development standpoint in South Alabama. You've had two separate announcements. The first one was an Airbus announcement, adding 1,000 jobs. There and 1,000 jobs then on Wednesday were announced during a press conference, a lengthy one, quite frankly. It was kind of a press event, I would call it, not necessarily a press conference. And that was held at the South Alabama mega site in north of Bay Minette. And just for the folks that might be listening and wondering what the mega site is, it was a 3,000-acre, basically middle-of-nowhere set-aside property that the Baldwin County Commission, over the years, they purchased this property dating back to 2011. They bought this property with hopes that it'd be developed someday. Yeah. And over the years, they've fought to try and get some get a big-name manufacturer in there that could really make an impact, not just a couple of businesses here and there and call it a day. They wanted a major manufacturer. They were also in play about 4 years ago for the Mazda Toyota plant, but that wound up going to the Huntsville area.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you think about what happens from a long-term planning perspective, right? Most of what we focus on is what's happening, in the short term from election cycle to election cycle. But props to the Baldwin County Commission for having the foresight to be thinking more of a long view.
Yeah, and they recognized that during the event on Wednesday. They recognized that they did take that long view. They purchased an option on the property. I think the date that they cited was 2006.
Okay.
So this really goes back far. And then they outright bought it in 2011 and started the slow process of getting the property ready for a manufacturer to come in. They played the long game. And if you talk to economic development professionals in this state, that's what they talk about. And we tend to get caught up in kind of with government and politics. We want the instant gratification or the 24/7 news cycle. But when it really comes to the nuts and bolts of governing, and especially on the economic development side, to get a big win like this doesn't happen every 3 months. It happens very rarely. So, even though we're seeing all this news this week of all these jobs coming, these are projects that are in the works for quite some time, especially at the South Alabama mega site. There was some emotion at this news conference as well. Again, a lot of these folks have been part of trying to attract a major manufacturer to this particular economic development site for years. And to finally get that win really did produce some emotions. You're talking about a $2.5 billion low-carbon, fully integrated aluminum recycling and rolling plant. That's a mouthful, but the price tag in itself, the investment, actually is a little bit higher than the Mazda Toyota plant in Huntsville. That should put that really is eye-opening.
Yeah, absolutely. There was one other thing that struck me in the reporting, and I think you made a reference to kind of like a $100 million level of tax breaks. Can you just take a moment and explain that?
Sure, yeah. The state, a lot of times in order to land a big fish, you got to have an agreement, and the state, the government often has to come up with tax credits or tax abatements and a combination of that in order to lure a large job-producing type of entity to the state. And that's exactly what happened here. The Alabama Department of Commerce, they provided a kind of a snapshot of some of the tax credits that they're offering. And they include, they total up to about $135.3 million, but that's over the course of about 10 years.
Okay.
So that involves credits, a jobs credit, for instance. It's valued at $17.5 million over 10 years. But in order for this company to receive a certain amount of that credit, they have to employ a certain number of employees at this facility. I think around 800 is what they mentioned.
I got you.
But the company is vowing to bring 1,000 employees. So some of these credits are tied into to measurables that will be determined over a period of time on whether or not they'll receive the credits. Now, I say all that, that there's also other credits that are in the works that haven't been finalized yet, and that will involve the Baldwin County Commission and the Bay Minette City Council. That'll include property tax abatements, perhaps a sales tax abatement, and so there's more to come on that.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, thanks a lot for explaining that, because that's one of the things that we often lose sight of when we're happy about the business coming in, is that there are some things and incentives that we typically have to offer in order to get folks to choose us over the alternative location. So with that, is it okay if we talk about another one of the articles that you wrote?
Let's go right ahead.
All right, so I want to shift a little bit to electoral season. As I mentioned during the introduction of the second half of the program, we just spent a little time talking to Secretary Merrill. And looking through your articles, it looks like you wrote one about our friends on the Republican side in the Senate race, specifically the dispute between Britt and Brooks and their point of view on the issue of taxes. So can you just talk a little bit about that article and just kind of what you found out there?
Yeah, kind of how that thing popped up is that, you know, we were supposed to have a debate this past week, but then as some of these past articles have indicated and the past news stories have indicated, Mike Durant, who's one of the three, we call him front runners in the Senate race, decided he did not want to participate in the debate. And without Mike Durant not participating, Katie Britt decided that, you know, she wasn't going to participate. And then that got Congressman Mo Brooks upset.
Right.
And some allegations were made back and forth. Through me, as a member of the media, I was going back and forth with both campaigns that, you know, both of them citing instances in the past in which they believe the other candidate had raised taxes or fees.
And, right.
In Republican Party politics, especially before a primary, that's kind of a big no-no. And if you have that in your past, you need to explain it. And so that's kind of where that article kind of formed up. There were some allegations, in particular, the one that I think that may have stuck the most coming from Congressman Brooks is he was pointing out that when Katie Britt was the head of the Business Council of Alabama, she gave a speech down in Mobile in which she indicated that, you know, that they were supportive of the Rebuild Alabama Act.
Sure.
And that's paid for through the gas tax increase. So that they were kind of relitigating that. The Britt campaign turned around and came back and accused Brooks when he was a member of the Madison County Commission, which has been well over 10 years ago, but when he was a member of the commission, of increasing water rates and various other fees, in which Brooks claimed a lot of that, those allegations were ludicrous, and he was pointing, you know, so there's a lot of back and forth here. As we get closer to the election, you're going to get a lot of that.
And as a journalist, you were the proverbial man in the middle?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, we're not having we're not having a debate in this race before the May 24th primary, unfortunately. As a reporter, I feel like I do moderate some debates.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
I'm going back and forth with the candidates, trying to get their positions on various issues while they're taking cuts at their opponent through members of the media.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting thinking about that whole topic of debates. I know that we were fortunate enough to facilitate one with Peter Albrecht from Channel 5 here in Mobile in collaboration with News 5, the local News 5 station, and FM Talk 106.5. And I thought that just doing that really gives the listeners the opportunity to hear folks banter back and forth at the same time in the same place standing next to each other. And I think there's some value to that. And I think that in the contemporary times, it's almost like the front runners don't want to do it anymore because they don't want to run the risk of doing something wrong. It'd really be nice to see us be able to get back to something like that.
Yeah, I think it depends on some of the personalities involved as well and the office as well. The one thing I've seen that's still pretty solid are these forums, and there are a lot of them are hosted by the local political parties. In Mobile County in particular, I attended a GOP forum maybe about a month or so ago.
Okay.
He had all the candidates there from the Secretary of State's office. Now, it wasn't a debate per se, but it was an opportunity for them to stand up and speak in front of their opponents and then to give their take on the issues. And, yeah, I wish there was a little bit more engagement back and forth, a debate. I think there is value in that, too. As a journalist, I like reporting on those. I think they provide an illuminating moment for the voters and for the public.
So we've got about a minute left before we take our three-quarter of the hour break. And I know you've written two articles on the Secretary of State race. So what's your cut on that from the candidates that you've seen, at least on the Republican side of the ledger?
Well, unfortunately, these down-ballot races, and we just saw a poll come out here. As of today, I believe it was a poll by Gray TV and Alabama Daily News, and it shows that about 60%, close to 60% of the voters are undecided in that race.
Right.
So what that tells me is that they're just not tuned in, and and unfortunately, heading into the primary, name recognition is going to play a huge role probably in that race. What you're seeing right now is Auditor Jim Ziegler. He's well known throughout the state.
Sure.
He seems to be a front runner in this. And Representative Wes Allen, who also is well known, I believe he's been in the legislature for a while. And then there's two other opponents running. Ed Packard, he's currently with the Secretary of State's office, and Christian Horn up in the Huntsville area.
Gotcha.
And so it's a four-person race. I have a feeling this is going to go to a runoff, and then we'll probably get more attention and coverage at that point.
All right. Well, John, do you have a few more minutes to talk to us after the break?
Sure.
All right. Well, for the listening audience, we're going to take our three-quarter of the hour break, and then we will see you here in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, success.com.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just joining us, during the last segment, we started a conversation with John Sharp, who is a local reporter for AL.com. And we're talking a little bit about the Secretary of State's race. And so, John, I know you mentioned the four candidates on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, we also have Pamela Lafitte, who is running for that position. We are still looking to get her on the show. We'll be looking forward to getting that scheduled here over the next couple of weeks. So, John, did you have any final thoughts there on that Secretary of State's race that you wanted to share with the audience?
You know, I think this race, more than in previous years in that particular office, is going to get some attention, especially probably ahead of the runoff, because of the issues of election security and integrity that's been brought up by the Republican Party since 2020. And you got also an interesting back and forth already between Jim Ziegler and Wes Allen. Wes Allen, when he was in Mobile, said, you know, if Alabamas are looking for a, quote, showman in their next Secretary of State, they're not going to find it in him. And Ziegler's turned around and said, well, he's the watchdog who's led the battles against this and that and every other thing. So it's going to be an interesting to see if those two, especially, you know, if they are the two that survive and head to the runoff, and see how they interplay with each other.
All right. Well, I know when you and I talked yesterday, you said there are some new products that you're going to have available. Do you want to talk a little bit about what those are?
Yeah, we, through the Alabama Media Group, have started up something that we're calling The Lead. It's a digital subscription service that we're providing. Encourage people. We've been advertising it for months in the newspapers in Huntsville, Birmingham, and Mobile. And in particular, I write for the Mobile Lead as well. And it's, you know, basically mobilelead.com. You'll find it there, and you can subscribe. And we're providing a lot of we're investing a lot of time and effort into providing more local content. And you'll find it there in what we're calling this product called The Lead, L-E-D-E, spelled differently. So, yeah, I would encourage people to check it out.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that. And then we have a few minutes left before the program ends. I had an interesting memory that popped up yesterday. It was May 11th. And if memory serves me correctly, that is how you and I first were introduced to each other. Can you tell the audience what you did on May 11th, 2017?
Yeah, I was trying to figure out who this Robert Kennedy Jr. guy was. I was running for the Senate. Now, keep in mind, to all the listeners, you're not running for anything this year. But back then, you were. And,
yes.
So I was trying to figure out exactly, because the name was just like, wait a minute here. Is this the same Robert? Is this related to the Kennedys? And I was just like, I don't know. And in covering the area, in the Mobile area for what was it, 2015, was it? What year was that, Robert? Help me out here. I'm already
losing track. So 2017 was the Senate election year.
17, yeah. So at that point, I've been covering the Mobile region for over 5-6 years, and you know, I didn't recognize the name Robert Kennedy Jr. from Pritchard at all. So I was a little skeptical about who this guy was, and so, you know, the mystery candidate.
Yes, yeah.
I believe at the time you said you'd be talking more about yourself and revealing your platform and so on and so forth. So,
yeah, two things about that I want to call out. The first one is that Robert Kennedy Jr. is not running for anything in 2022.
Nothing,
right? And normally,
not even the New Jersey Robert Kennedy Jr.
Yeah, I was going to say, even, and I normally say that with a lot more enthusiasm and colorful language when anybody asks me. But having said that, there is a candidate by the name of Arthur Kennedy, who is on the ballot for governor. I am not him. He is not me. And I think partially because the name of our program is Kennedy for Alabama, a lot of people naturally assume that it is us, but it definitely is not us. The other thing that was interesting about the whole mystery candidate phase, and I was talking about this a little bit earlier today, was there's an enormous amount of skepticism for any one of a number of reasons when people decide they're going to run for political office. So Mr. John Sharp had the distinction of being the person who found me first, right? Even though I didn't respond to you right off the bat, that you had, in fact, found me. And it was just funny just listening to my friend, you know, people from high school, people from the neighborhood, you know, folks who knew me, you know, with me being outside of political circles, all just kind of pinging me and saying, hey, somebody's trying to track you down. So that was definitely an interesting time and an interesting introduction to the whole political process.
And then you got, what, second place in that primary, is that correct? Or?
I did. You know, and
who won it?
That was Senator Doug Jones,
yes,
right?
Yes, Doug Jones.
Yeah, the one thing that was really interesting about that was having those conversations with people, and you know this better than anybody since you're in that space, and folks would ask the question, what is it that you're going to do if you don't win? Because, you know, a lot of people pop on the scene and then they end up dropping off. And the commitment that we made as a family was that we were going to continue to be active. And this program, Kennedy for Alabama, is one example of us being active. We saw a need primarily on the Democratic side where there wasn't access to the airwaves. And we just wanted to create that opportunity. Shout out to Sean Sullivan, who gave us the first one. But we wanted to create that opportunity to create opportunity for other people as well. So we were really excited about being able to do that.
Yeah, and I just want to share, you know, shout out to you, John. Shout out to all the media that has been responsive and really, you know, aligned. We want to bring the voice of the people to our leaders and our leaders' voice to the people. And we want to do that across the line. So, I mean, we want to like basically what we talk about, elevate the conversation. Let's have useful, thoughtful, thought-provoking conversations about ways to make our lives better. And you are critical in that. So thank you so much.
And I thank you all, too. I mean, and I agree. I mean, the more thoughtfulness and more deep dives into these talks and issues, the better we all are.
Amen.
All right. So, John, we're going into our last minute here. So just let the listening audience know if they want to get in contact with you directly, how can they do that?
Well, there's several ways. One of them is I'm on Twitter, at JohnSharp99. Of course, anybody can email me at any time, jsharp@al.com. Real simple, jsharp@al.com. And those are probably the two best routes to go to reach me.
All right, John. Well, thanks a lot for calling in and spending a few minutes with us tonight. We'll be looking forward to talking to you next time.
You take
care. Looking forward to it as well.
Thank you.
All right. So, Aquilin, we got about 30 seconds left.
What other
thoughts do you have to share?
Well, you know what? We are 12 days from the primary election,
mm-hmm.
right? We don't have all that much time. But one thing I will say is those sample ballots are up and available.
Yes.
So if you have not seen your ballot, do everyone a favor and take a look at it so you won't take too long in the ballot, you know, at the ballot box, voting and keeping it moving. Let's stay efficient and let's get educated. So please take a look at your sample ballot and do your research and let us know. You can find us online or on our website.
All right. And the other thing I will say is there are constitutional amendments on the ballot as well. So look those up in advance so that you understand what you're actually voting for. So with that, this episode of Kennedy for Alabama has come to an end. Thank you guys so much for your commitment and your time. Until next week, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and you have been listening to Kennedy for Alabama.